Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
I'm Chase Ralston with Rubline Marketing.
This is Jeff Lindsay.
This is Michael Pitt.
Hey, everybody, it's John Dudley from Knock On TV.
Hey, guys, this is Jared Scheffler from Whitetail Adrenaline.
Hi, I'm Taylor Drury from Drury Outdoors.
Hey, this is Nick Munt from Bow Collector.
Hey, this is Melissa Buckman.
Working Class Bowhunter.
You're listening to the Working Class Bowhunter. That's right, this is a podcast for Billy Joe Lunchbucket, the working man, just like me and you. My name's Travis T. Bone Turner from the Bone Collector. Thank you for tuning in.
Nobody pushes the envelope like Working Class Bowhunter.
It's really, really not that good.
Working class bowhunter.
Hey there, nice to have you. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, how are you?
Working Class Bowhunter podcast, that is. Not the Working Class Bowhunter or Crossbow Hunter, I guess I should say there. Even though we are apparently top 10 or top 5, if you will, of crossbow hunting podcasts.
We take back what we said about crossbows.
We made a list.
We made it.
Some prince from India sent me an email saying that we made the top 5.
So. They must shoot a lot of crossbows over there.
They wanted me to send them a bunch of money. Bless him.
That's great.
Yeah, good for him.
Hey,
you're
top 10. Send me money.
Yeah.
Cool.
I'll send you this award. Yeah, it was a weird email. I screenshotted it and posted it on our Instagram story. I was like, wow, we've made it. We've really done it.
Funny shit.
The podcast is presented by HHA Sports. Super thankful for HHA. Supported us, since damn near close to the beginning.
Yep.
Definitely thankful for that partnership. Drop away rest, single pin sights. They really have everything for whatever skill level or however deep in the game you're trying to go. But check out HHA. Use code WCB15. Podcast is also brought to you by Scent Crusher, Loophole Optics, Thermoseat, Victory Archery, Gator Outdoors, Elite Archery, Big Time, Old Barn Taxidermy. So super thankful for all our kick-ass partners. And once again, we say it a lot. I don't know why they support us the way they do, but we're thankful for it.
No idea why.
And they see something in us that no one else did. Just get emotional thinking about it.
They see the potential.
Yeah, they're like, wow, these... I was going to say some dark shit again. I have a limiter, even though it don't seem like I do. I just know, like, there's certain words you can't say anymore that, like,
I don't know what changed, though, because you usually didn't have a limiter on you.
Yeah, but there's, like, certain words I don't even really like when people use them. And so I'm trying to do better.
That rice burner was tapped.
It just sounds like an old WRX just bouncing off the top there. Doug, you got a veteran shout out?
I do. This was sent in by JD Longstreet, and the veteran is Randy Longstreet. He was in the Navy. It says, my dad did two tours in Vietnam on the USS Coral Sea. He has spent his free time in life hunting and fishing. He has a general passion for the outdoors, so much so that he bought some land in northeast Michigan that was an old hunting ranch and was in the process of moving there when he had a massive heart attack. He currently is in the Mirror Heart Center fighting to get back out in the woods after a quadruple bypass. When he came to after 2 days of being sedated because he wasn't stable, the first thing he said to me was, "Are you ready to go?" I said, "Go where?" He replied, "Get your ass in the woods and have fun. Shoot a big one."
Damn.
That's awesome. That's
cool. Thank you for that shout out, and thank you for your service, Randy. Hopefully you get back on your feet and shoot a big one.
Absolutely.
Hell yes. Thank you.
Thanks Randy. Service. Hope you're doing good, buddy. That's hardcore.
That is hardcore.
Wakes up, he's like, "What are you still doing here? What are you doing here?
Get your ass back out in the woods, son.
Go hunting. What the heck? You some sort of hussy?" That's awesome. Thanks for your service, man. Appreciate that. Cool veteran shout out. You can go to our website to submit veteran shout outs underneath the contact tab. They go straight to Dougie mm-hmm. Fresh, and then he reads them on air. We try to keep them in order as best as we can.
I think we only got one left now.
Man, we've been
sending them in, people.
Send them in. We know you know someone. Awesome. So moving on, this podcast, I didn't have an unpopular opinion segment lined up, but we'll get it on the next one. So sorry about that. But let me give a little pre-intro before the actual intro, if that makes sense. We have our buddy Damien on. He is from Ohio. And God damn, can we talk about Ohio?
It's been on fire this year.
Ohio is no longer a sleeper state. Indiana's like, what about me? Sitting in between everybody.
What about me?
But Ohio has been on fire. We know some big buck killers out of Ohio. Damien being one of the top big buck killers, especially east in the country, east of the Mississippi.
Yeah.
You know, he's definitely claimed that just by his resume of big bucks and everything that he's done in the hunting, bow hunting world in general. So Damien from Ohio, we're going to get him on. He's a member of our team working class, formerly known as Team Hang and Bang. Team working class just seemed more simple, a little cleaner.
Yeah, it's got a nice ring to it.
Yeah, we got
that's ring-a-ding.
A pile of people on there. We're not taking any new people yet in it. It's just good where it's at, and you know, we've got to know everybody real well, and we kind of built like this little tight-knit community. So
absolutely.
It's just a good crew of people that we're getting more and more involved with as availability happens and more opportunity and time comes up for us, which we're working for that for 2021. This whole COVID thing's kind of getting in the fucking way, though.
It's throwing a wrench in our spokes.
Throwing a goddamn wrench in our spokes. But
bastard.
Let's get Damien on. Thank you for listening. We appreciate the hell out of you. All right. On the podcast, Damien Riffle, or Rifle, as I'm just going to call him because I think it's cooler. Welcome, man.
What's going on, fellas?
Oh, just doing our podcast thing, man. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem.
I will say, you know, you are a member of Team Working Class, and I was kind of going through the list. I'm like, how the fuck have we not got Damien on this whole time? So apologies there, but well, here we are. We're getting it done. You're a big buck killer. Kind of give yourself a little introduction so people get to know you a little bit.
Well, I'm from kind of East Central Ohio. Been bow hunting most of my life, and probably I started like getting into the trophy hunting side of it after I got out of the military in 2000. Before that, it was kind of whack 'em and stack 'em. I'd be hunting six different states, and I was shooting 15 to 20 deer a year with my bow. And you know, hunting a lot of southern states, you just don't have the trophy quality. And that was really before like trail cameras. And then once the trail cameras kind of got more mainstream, and then especially once they went to SD cards and went digital, like that just sparked the fire. And then I got moved back to Ohio after the military, obviously, and it just kind of exploded from there. And pretty much since 2003, I've shot pretty much a 140 type deer or better. I think there's maybe 1 year in there that I was below that, but that's kind of where it's at. And my wife hunts, and she's kind of like my second buck tag in Ohio. So I after I'm tagged out, I focus on kind of finding her a buck and getting her out there, and she's killed some whoppers herself.
Very cool. Yeah, so you don't have to worry about like asking permission to go on trips or taxidermy bills and shit like that.
She understands it.
Yeah. Well, I refer to her as Ellie Mae Clampett. She's kind of a redneck pretty girl, and she loves her animals. Like, so she she doesn't give me any crap for any of my hunting trips, and I keep her with goats and chickens and whatever she wants on that side of things. You know, if I got to build a fence and I can go on an elk hunting trip, then so be it.
It's all worth it. Everybody's happy.
Nice.
That all works. Do that in a heartbeat.
Good way to keep it in balance. Yeah. Good way.
Well, first of all, too, thank you for your service.
Yeah.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you guys.
So pretty cool. It's good to finally have you here. You've had a hell of a 2020 season. I guess the first place we'll start with your season is your mule deer trip.
Yeah.
I guess, before that, are you a big turkey hunter? Just going back like full circle for the year.
Honestly, I turkey hunt, but it's like turkeys just kind of fill the void. It's nice to be out in the spring.
Yeah.
It's cool to be out there, but honestly, things that don't have antlers don't get my rocks off.
Right. Like, okay.
I need antlers.
So, you know? So you're on Team Eric. Fuck turkeys.
Yep.
Yeah, kind of. And I mean, like I said, they're cool to get out there and do it. And I've killed a pile, but like if I don't know, they all look the same. They all sound the same. I think they're highly overrated, and people think they're way smarter than they are. I just think they're extremely stupid. that's where people think they're smart. They're so stupid. They do things that, like, they walk up to a tree and they don't know how to go around it or over it, and they turn around and walk away. You know, they do.
God forbid they run into a fence.
Or a fence, or whatever. They're just really dumb birds, in my opinion. But
it's probably fair to say that turkeys now, if you don't just really enjoy turkey hunting, it's a good way for TV shows to fill episodes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that too. And, you know, honestly, like 20 years ago when I got out of the military, that was like the flock in Ohio's like heyday. And back then I had a lot more ground that I could hunt, and you could go out, you could get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you could go out and get on a bird you roosted the night before. If you screwed that one up, you could just hop over the ridge and get another one. Now, the flock isn't nearly what it used to be, and you get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you drive an hour to your farm, and you don't hear a turkey gobble within a mile of you, and you're like, what the fuck did I just get up at 3 o'clock in the morning for?
Okay.
I can tell you right now, I ain't get up at 3 o'clock for no damn turkey.
That's fair. Okay, now we know how you're on Team Eric, fuck turkeys.
Yep.
And I get that. So let's talk about this mule deer hunt, man. Like, where'd you go? How'd you plan it? All the goods.
Well, it you know, with the working class team, Clay Thurman and I, we kind of, I don't know how we ended up talking.
You're the old dudes.
BSing, and
he missed it. He's like, I'm just move right past that one. I don't know if you heard me or not.
I missed it.
I said, you're the old dudes.
The old dudes. Yeah, that could be it. The old dudes. And so we had the old guys kind of pulling together and talking about our Geritol and things. And We talked several times on the phone, and obviously our personalities were both sarcastic assholes, and it was a lot of fun. And then we met up at the shoot this summer, and we actually shot the shoot together. And in that process, you know, just became closer. And then, you know, we were talking about hunting trips and things, and obviously he kills some whopper mule deer every year. And I said, well, you know, mule deer's never really been on my list, but it's kind of starting to get on my list now that I'm kind of narrowing things down. And he was talking about bears, and I have family in West Virginia, and I have great success in West Virginia bear hunting. And it's basically, there's always like a week in October that the bears really start showing up, and my cousins will be like, hey, we're seeing bears every time we go out. Come down and shoot one. And I go down there, and I'm down there a couple days, and I shoot a pretty nice bear every time I've been down there.
Oh, cool.
And so I told Clay, well, you know, that, you know, he could come out and bear with me. And he had been burnt on some hunts before, and I said, and then next year if you get a bear and you're happy and everything, you know, maybe invite me out mule deer hunting. And that was the plan. And then, you know, mule deer season was getting closer, and he called me up, and he's like, you know what, this is stupid. I was trying to think of who I'm going to take the hunt camp this year. And he's like, you know, we get along great, and, you know, why don't you come with me? And this is like 2 weeks before season. And I was like, well, okay. So kind of spur of the moment. And so I drove out to Nebraska and met him at his house there and met his family and beautiful little girls they has there. And he showed me some of the awesome muleys he's killed. And we kind of discussed, like, what my, like, game plan was or what my expectations were. And, you know, I said, honestly, if I come out here and shoot like a 160 type mule deer, I'd be ecstatic. Like I couldn't ask for anything more than that. Like right. That's
realistic.
Great
and
representation. I feel like a 160 muley is just a great, like, specimen. It's not enormous, but it's a great specimen of that species.
Looks, you know, like a muley.
It's a great representation of the species.
Yeah. Yeah. It's textbook and, muley. When you open a book, you want to look up a mule deer. That's probably what you'd see.
Yeah, yeah, right. And anything smaller than that, I really wouldn't. He's like, well, you say that, you're going to see the first two-year-old and want to shoot it. And I said, well, the killer in me might come out, but more than likely, I'm going to hold out for something a little bit nicer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the game was, he has private acreage out there, and, you know, the game plan is anything he passes, I can shoot. Once he tags out, I help him find a buck, and once he tags out, anything you know, we come across after that, you know, is fair game as well, which I thought was perfectly fair. You know, it's his property, his hunt. Mm-hmm. And so we headed out and we set up camp, and, you know, the first place we set up camp looked amazing. Like, you couldn't ask for, like, better just terrain, just ravines and coulees and just was amazing. He had never hunted it before. It was another 1,500 acres he had gained permission on. And oddly, there was no deer there. But I think it was because there was so much crops that all the deer were in the cropland, and they just weren't pushed into those ravines I won't say woods, because it's not really woods out there, but kind of the bottoms and stuff. So then we talked to the landowner, and he's like, yeah, it usually doesn't, we don't start seeing deer till the crops are off. So that, it made all made sense. But so the day before season, I stayed on that farm to kind of spot and stalk or scout, and he drove over to his old farm and scouted over there, and self service was really shoddy out there. So it was kind of hit and miss if we could text one another or whatever. And comes back to camp, and he's like, man, I saw a really big body deer. And he had like this half-assed photo where you could just see a big body and some antler on top of his head, but you couldn't tell much about him. He's like, he's just not, he goes, I don't want to shoot him. He's like, he's not what I kind of am wanting for opening day, you know? So, I said, well, if you don't want him, I probably don't want him. It's kind of where I told him I was at with it.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, from what you could tell from the photo, he didn't look like anything great, or he didn't look like a classic mule deer from what I could tell. And, so the next morning we went out, we spotted a few small ones, didn't see a whole lot, came back from lunch, and he's like, I'm telling you, man, that was a big mature deer. You should go over there and try to kill that deer. And then I started thinking, I was like, you know what? And I may mention, I was like, well, what happened if a 160 steps out in front of me? He's like, well, you better shoot it. But if a 200 comes out, you better come find me. And so I was like, well,
ask for forgiveness, not permission.
Yep.
Exactly. Right. But I thought, you know, I'd rather be hunting
the big body
than just scouting for somebody, you know? So I was like, all right, I'll go over there. So kind of went in, kind of half-assed, did a setup and was on a fence line. And that buck had come out of this cornfield. And I sat there and didn't see anything. And then right at last light at like 250 yards, and honestly, I probably wouldn't have seen them, but there was a little bit of a rise to the hill, and they were at the crest, and they were skylined. I saw two small bucks, and then the third buck stepped out, and I was like, holy shit. Like, I just, like, from 200, 250 yards, whatever it was, like, you just saw mass and G2s. And I'm like, that... Yeah, I'll shoot that for
sure. We call that a no-brainer.
Yeah, 100% no-brainer. Like, and I'm thinking, okay, surely this isn't the same buck that Clay said he wouldn't shoot, but it was in the exact same spot. And I'm like, you know, I'm not going to go back and make this buck seem like he's bigger than he is and get cut, you know?
Yeah.
So we went back to camp, and I was like, oh, he's nice. I saw him. So next morning we went out, tried to find a buck for Clay. Saw a couple decent bucks, but nothing we wanted to go after. And went back for lunch. And I said, well, I want to go in there, kind of make a ground blind, because I felt like I was exposed where I was at. and I want to kind of take a cedar over there and kind of give myself a little more break up where I was at. And I went over there, got it set up, and then while I was there, I had cell service, and I pulled up the weather, and the wind was shifting the opposite direction and was going to blow straight down the corn hedge for that evening. I'm like, son of a bitch, you know? So I went in there for nothing. So I had the four-wheeler, and I went down the corn hedge all the way down the farm road, and I turned and was coming back, and those deer were coming out of the corn, jumping a fence, crossing the farm road, and going into a pasture. And there was a big, steep, like, straight wall ravine that kind of cut through that hay field, not a pasture. Mm-hmm. And as I was driving by that on the four-wheeler, one of the small bucks that was with that big buck went shooting down the straight wall canyon. And I was like, damn, I wonder if they're bedded on that side of the road today. But I just kept, you know, motoring by, and hopefully they wouldn't spook out of there. And I went back and told Clay the situation, and the wind was wrong. And I said, I could drive by, and there were some planters parked out at the far end of the cornfield. I said, but I don't want to drive that four-wheeler by there again. So Clay was like, well, he came up with the idea that I would take it around that section, come in the backside through the cattle pasture, come up the last kind of ravine, and then walk that corn edge. And I was just going to set up in the corn edge.
Mm-hmm.
And at the kind of the crest of the hill. And, you know, trying to play that spot and stalk side of it. And, well, I get in there, and that's what I did. And I'm walking down the corn edge, and every time one of them, like, canyon kind of fed up into the cornfield, the corn, the crop deprivation, the corn went from 8 feet high and was just bowled out, right?
Yeah,
like, and
yeah.
You'd have this massive trail coming through there, jumping the fence, going into the hay field. And I was like, holy shit, that's a hell of a crossing. You go down to the next one 100 yards away or 50 yards away, same thing. And I'm like, well, how am I supposed to pick which one he's going to come up, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought if I sat at the crest of the hill, I could see there would be six that I could hunt, and I'd only be cutting two off. Whereas if I sat all the way at the edge of the field, I could only watch those two. So I had to get to the crest of the hill. So I decided that's what I was going to do. And it's 95 degrees. The sun was banging that day. It was just scorching hot. And I go to the crest of the hill, and I'm kind of looking where I want to get set up there in the first row of corn. And I look up, and that big son of a bitch was 250 yards walking straight down the ranch road straight towards me at like 5:30 in the evening or whatever it was.
No shit.
And I'm just kind of dumbfounded. I was like, holy shit, it's for real? So he wanted, I think what he was trying to do, he was bedded in the that canyon with that other buck, I think, and that heat had him wanting to go to water, and the water was on the opposite side of the corn.
Uh-huh.
So he was trying to get the water, but the way that ranch road is, there was a big swale, like a big 4-foot ditch, and he dropped down in that, and all I could see was his rack. And when all I could see was his rack, I started closing the distance. I stepped in the first row of corn, and I started closing the distance. And he would get to each fence crossing, and because of the way that ditch was, he couldn't jump over the fence, and his rack was too big. He couldn't squirt under the fence, and he would get to every crossing and, like, size it up. He'd go up, and he'd look over
God
it,
damn it,
and he'd look under it. And then he'd be like, nope, can't do it here. And he'd keep working his way to me. And I kept working my way to him. And finally he got to like 90 yards, and he was at that one. And I was like, okay, if he doesn't cross there, the next one, he's in range, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I kind of got my shit together there. And he left that one, and then he came to the next one. And I could just tell, like, he went up and touched his chest on the fence, and he was looking over it, and then he kind of backed up and looked under it, and then he went back up and touched his chest, and I could just tell by his body posture he was going to jump the fence there. And so I got ready, and he kind of squatted down to load his back legs, and when he did that, I drew back on him, and he jumped the fence, and he hooked his back leg on the fence. And
oh,
he started
shit.
Yanking on his back leg, and it sounded like banjo just zinging down that strand, you know, coming by me. And while while he was doing that, I had that Garmin sight. I ranged him, and he was 67 yards, and he yanked his foot loose, and he took like three steps over to the corn, and he had his head in the corn, and I freaking put the pressure to it, and the shot broke, and I heard it smack him, and he mule kicked and went into the corn, and I kind of had a little bit of a meltdown there.
And awesome. How much time went by from when you saw him on the road until you got your shot off? Like, you know, you're closing distance, he's coming at you, checking fences. Like, how much time from there to the shot went by, do you think?
I'm going to say 2 minutes.
Oh, shit, quick. Oh,
damn.
It was pretty quick. Like, when I saw him, and he was just at a steady pace, just a steady walk. And then he would, like, in a couple of those fence crossings, he would just, like, glance over him at him and stop. But he went to, he physically walked up the three of them and kind of sized them up. And the third one was the one that he crossed. So it was, I'm going to say 2 to 3 minutes tops.
No kidding.
And
I'm thinking, so when you're telling this story, like a half an hour.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was thinking, too, you know.
But you were hustling, Damien. I mean, you were moving up on him pretty quick, so.
Well, yeah, but, like, he was far enough away that, like, I was trying to cover distance, you know, and right. I had just stepped in that first row of corn, and I could just see him, and he was walking, he was preoccupied, and I was covering ground, you know.
And
I was,
you had that wind covered. Did you have that wind in your face the whole time? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yep, 100%. Yep.
Oh, you're dialed in.
See, that's cool. That right there, that everything you're kind of explaining, that somebody with some bow hunting experience to know when to make more aggressive moves like that rather than sit and just be more passive.
Just hope he comes your way.
Yeah, to just sit there and hope. Well, you know, you're on a trip like that, you're limited.
I felt that there was too many crossings between him and I that if I just sat where I was at, he was going to find one to cross, you know? So I knew I had to kind of cut some of the distance. And I probably, I don't know, realistically, I might have cut 60 or 70 yards, but it felt like it was probably 100 yards. But
And you go into that thinking that you're a ninja, and then you feel like a rodeo clown as you're running through those stalks. Like, oh, shit.
Right.
I'm going to screw this 100%. Up so bad.
Well, people don't realize, too, is, you know, walking stealthy and being conscious about how much noise you're making and looking and paying attention to wind, like walking like a ninja like that, that's exhausting.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That takes a lot out of you.
In, like, corn stalks, like you guys know. And once that shit's yellowed and you're walking through it and it sounds like you're, you know, everything's brushing against you. It sounds like it's crazy loud, you know?
Oh, me and Eric in South Dakota, we stalked an antelope. There were standing corn there just off the standing cornfield.
Yeah, but South Dakota corn ain't nothing like Iowa and Illinois.
No,
corn.
No.
It was about
4 foot corn.
Maybe four and a half feet
more
tall.
More like Milo.
It was, you know, it honestly was, you know, and, but, you know, we lived that life a little bit. We're ducking through the shittiest corn of all time.
Yep.
So, but yeah, that's awesome, man. So shot breaks off, he dips off into the corn. Now what?
Well, he just, once he mule kicked and broke into the corn, and I heard corn breaking for just a couple seconds, and then it went silent. So I stood there for a second. I was like, well, I got to call Clay. So I called Clay, and I told him, he's like, well, how big do you think he is? I go, I don't know. I think he's like a 160. He's like, oh, that's fucking awesome. You know, you got all excited for me. And, so he drove over and he stopped probably about where I saw the deer coming to begin with. So he was probably 150 yards from me, and he stepped over the fence and started working his way to me. And we're talking on the phone, and I'm ranging him with my rangefinder, and he gets to like 75 yards. And I said, my arrow, if it blew through him, it should be right there. And he took like four more steps and found my arrow laying there.
No shit. That's kind of cool.
Zing right through him, huh?
Yeah, it passed right through him and hit the ground and just did an end over end and was actually pointing back towards me when he found it. And he said, looks like we got a little bit of stomach matter. And I was like, oh, because when the shot broke, the sun was bright and it looked like my arrow was drifting a little bit back. But I felt like it was still in the ribs.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when he said there was stomach matter on it, I was like, oh, shit. So wasn't crazy about that, but I was shooting a big 2-inch severs, and I'm like, okay, well, he's still going to die because, you know, he lethal. Just ain't going to live through that.
Yeah, right.
And so he comes up, and he takes like three more steps, and he's like, but there's a lot of blood. And then he took like another step, and he looked into the corner, and he goes, I mean a lot of blood. And while I I forgot to mention, after I initially called him, I hung up the phone, and just after I hung up the phone, I heard corn crash. And I'm like, that sounded like a deer fall. And so we went now when I walked up to there where he ran into the corn, it looked like somebody had two paintbrushes and just ran through the corn. And, you know, the blood was just everywhere on the corn. And he goes, well, he goes, this is your hunt. He's like, but there's stomach matter on the arrow. He's like, but there's a lot of blood. And typically I feel like I probably would have backed out just because of the stomach matter on the arrow.
Right.
But I felt like I heard the deer fall. Like the noise that I heard was just a quick crash, and it just sounded like it was a loud crash and then nothing. And,
but just for all the listeners here, sorry to interrupt you. Can you explain when you looked at that arrow yourself? I mean, stomach matter, like what are you looking at there?
So there wasn't a lot. It was definitely covered in blood. Yep. But there was a little bit of like grass fiber looking stomach matter, you know, on the arrow, a little bit of yellowish to it.
Okay.
But I couldn't tell. It wasn't excessive, so I didn't know if maybe just the, you know, one of the blades clipped it and the arrow passed through, or, you know, I didn't feel like it was a straight gut shot, especially with the amount of blood that was there.
Right.
So at this point, I'm thinking, okay, maybe I got, you know, I was trying to relive it, think back, was he quartering to me at all? You know, what?
That was going
to
be my question. Like was he completely broadside, or was he quartering to just a little bit?
Right. So I started questioning that and trying to relive it in my mind. And, you know, I just wasn't sure. And I told him, I was like, you know, if I didn't hear that crash, I would say let's give him some time. But let's just kind of ease in here at least, you know. And again, where he ran into the corn was the crop deprivation. So that corn was literally waist to shoulder high at best.
Yeah.
And, you know, I felt like if we went in there, you know, 15, 20 rows, you know, we'd see what happened or where the blood led to. And so we started into the corn, and, you know, I'm kind of easing through there and look at following blood. And I kept looking down the rows to my left, because when I heard the crash, it sounded like the buck was between where I was standing and where I was shot him from. It sounded like he was in between there, you know?
Yeah.
So he's kind of running.
So I keep like easing up on the blood, looking down the corn rows to my left. And, we get in the corn probably 20 yards and Clay says, I smell him. And I'm thinking, you know, oh, sure you do. You know, I'm like, you smell him.
Yeah. All right, but, Clay, don't be an asshole.
So at that point, I didn't really think anything of it. And he had looked to the right and saw the buck laying there. And he backed up and started recording me. And he's like, keep following the blood, man. Keep following the blood. And I'm still like easing forward, looking
to the
left.
You're like, what the fuck are you doing recording?
The goddamn deer's like 5 yards to my right, laying right beside me. And I'm looking to the left. And finally, I lost blood, you know, where he was at, and I'm looking around, and I glance to the right, and I just see a big gray ass laying there.
Ah, oh, cool, and, man.
So he didn't run 25 yards, and he stood there for a minute and a half from the time I shot him to the time I heard him crash, and he was dead right there. So
That's awesome.
Kick ass, dude. Congrats. That's a good story. That's what you hope for.
Yeah.
Especially when you think his shot was back, you start to panic.
Yeah, and it, you know, I couldn't have asked for a better first mule deer. I mean, he had 17-inch G2s, 7.5-inch bases. I mean, the clay saw the sight he saw that he decided he didn't want to shoot. His fork was weak, and his front was okay, but wasn't anything great. So he was like, that's not really what I'm looking for. And then after I killed him, he was like, yeah, if I would have realized he was that, I probably would have killed him.
So you got the pass, though.
Yeah, so he got the pass. And
so you're invited back.
He was 25 inches wide, you know, 17-inch twos, 7.5-inch bases, full velvet. Just I couldn't have asked for a better first muley. I was
ecstatic. That's awesome.
And to meet my expectations, he scored 160 and an 8.
No shit. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a calculated man right there. Super calculated.
That's got to make you feel good, too, being a Midwest guy and going out on your first
kind of spot and stock style hunt and having success like that right out of the gate. That's pretty right. sweet.
Sure. Yeah, 100%.
So what kind of mount are we doing?
I don't really know. I kind of left it. My taxidermist is pretty amazing. And I kind of left it up to him to kind of come up with something. Cause you know, I have a pile of whitetail mounts and, I just don't want it to just be another mount that doesn't really pop, you know? So I want, mm-hmm. I want some wow factor to it. You know, the fact that he's in full velvet.
Yeah, that's awesome. Full velvet.
You know, so it, I'm not sure what he'll do. So I told him, I gave him kind of, open range to do whatever he came up with.
Well, that's awesome.
It's definitely going to pop, especially for that full velvet. And everyone, you know, you can tell a difference between a even if someone sees a room full of whitetails and then one mule deer,
they'll be able to tell the difference. Absolutely. Yeah, even if they don't know what a mule deer is.
He had a beautiful cape, too, double throat patch.
Oh, sweet.
Pretty awesome. Pretty awesome deer.
Lucky fucker. That's cool, man. Yeah, definitely. That'll be cool though to get some variety in there against all the giant whitetails that you have. But you know, will this be a buck that makes the main room? Like, is he going to be a living room buck?
Probably. Yeah. Well, you know, I was thinking about that. Like my loft area upstairs, I kind of have that as I don't want to say exotics, but they're my like my full body mount bears up there, my bear rugs up there, my elk. Euro mount is up. Both my elk Euro mounts are up there. So I kind of thought about turning that into like my Western, room, if you will. But
yeah.
I don't know. I'll probably stick him down in the main room at least for a year or so. So I can just kind of sit on the couch and stare at him, you know,
right. Soak them all right. in. Soak them all in.
Damien, yeah. How many mounts do you have in your house? do you know off the top of your head?
Not really. I'm going to
say if you don't know, it's enough.
20, it's way more enough. 20 whitetails, maybe 22. I don't know. I've given a couple of the smaller ones away. I gave them to my barber shop.
that's when you know you got a pile of them.
Yeah. Nice.
They just, you know, I don't want to they just didn't fit anymore. You know what I mean? They were some of my earlier mounts, and they just didn't. They didn't make the cut.
I hope you had free haircuts for life.
Wasn't gonna just put him in the basement or something like that. You know,
that's a good deal.
Barber shop. You know, I mentioned it to him, and he's like, "Yeah, I'll hang him in here." So they're hanging in the barber shop.
That's cool.
That is cool. Well, hell yeah, man! Congrats on the muley. Good way to kick off the 2020 antler season, if you will.
Yeah, best way.
Let's talk about whitetails a little bit because that's your bread and butter. That would be more what you're known for because, I mean, if you got 22 studs in your house and you're giving mounts away to barbershops, I'd say
you're doing pretty well.
You're doing pretty well for yourself.
Damien, I want to hear about this. Right. I want to hear about Kickers, man. He's got some – he's a good-looking buck.
Yeah, he was a surprise to me. So the last few years, you know, I used to get a lot of shit because I had a lease for about 12 years, and a lot of my deer – came off of that lease, and everyone's like, "Oh, you just got a good ground," you know, the typical must be nice type bullshit, you know.
Yep.
And you know, I couldn't deny it. It was good ground. I
but
worked.
Idiots don't kill big deer,
that.
No matter what your ground is.
Right, and you know that farm sold 3 years ago, spur of the moment. I had it prepped for season August 1st. The old guy that owned it had a heart pacemaker put in. And he saw the writing on the wall, I think, and the way the trust was wrote up between him and his sister is whoever died first, the other one got sole ownership, the grandkids got nothing. So
damn.
If they sold it, the sister wanted to sell it for a long time. The brother, he was emotionally attached to it, so he hung on to it. And he finally agreed to sell it, and they told me August 1st that they were going to sell it. I tried to buy the sister out. At that time, because I had just paid my business off and I wasn't able, you know, it was just bad timing. And, their one son was kind of he's a huge punk, always in trouble with the law. And, you know, he would always ask to hunt, and I let him a couple times and I would tell him where to hunt and I would tell him not to walk around. And the next thing you know, he's on six of my trail cameras at prime time walking around, you know. And I just stopped letting him hunt. So he didn't like me a whole lot, needless to say. Well. And he didn't want me buying it, so he told the neighbor that they were going to sell it, and the neighbor cut a check for $700,000, and I was out. So,
whoa, damn.
Right. Can't you know, you can't compete with that.
No.
And, so then I just started casting lines, you know, trying to – this was – I had to have all my stuff off August 30th, and season opened the 28th of September. So, you know, I had basically a month to find property to hunt. I had – and I told my friends for several years, I got – I'm like, man, I got all my eggs in one basket, and one of these years it's going to bite me in the ass. And that was the year it kind of bit me in the ass. So I just started scrambling, trying to find ground, and I got permission on a piece of ground, had to learn it, and, you know, ended up shooting a pretty solid whitetail that year, you know, 7.5-year-old buck.
Damn.
On November 11th. I've always been, I would say, 85 to 90% of my deer are mid-October bucks. For many years. And so learning that new farm, there's a little bit of a learning curve. And I had to, took me a little longer to figure out the property. Didn't kill that deer till November 11th. And then that property sold this year. And
well, son of a bitch, and, man.
Right. Yeah. I was like, geez, it was like the horrible luck. So then I started scrambling again, trying to find property. And then I got permission on this. And these are, you know, not huge tracts of land. You know, where we're hunting now in Ohio, it's becoming quickly becoming the 20 acre, you know, hunting camp where
yep.
these big old farms are getting auctioned off into these smaller parcels, and every 20 acres has a little cabin shanty on it, and there are two guys hunting it, and you know it's getting harder and harder to find good spots. And so I got permission on this 58 acres, and I started putting cameras out. I wasn't overly excited about what I was getting. I was getting some really mature deer, but none of them broke 140. And, you know, I wasn't really ecstatic about it. And, you know, I wasn't having a good feeling about it. And then about 2 weeks before season showed up, I got some really shitty pictures of this buck that I ended up killing, and I called him Stickers. The landowner had a photo of him the year before. They called him Ugly because his right side was really kind of abnormal. I don't know if it's from injury or what, but his brow tine was basically like a 4-point antler, and then his main beam like did a hard 90, grew down, and then grew straight back up. It was kind of ugly, and that's why they called him Ugly. And he appeared to be like a 4-year-old at that time, and I said, well, if that buck survived, he should be a pretty solid deer. Yeah. And the landowner, you know, his kids grew up, and he just kind of has lost interest in hunting and doesn't feed or doesn't run cameras or anything. So that buck showed up, and I instantly was like, that's Ugly. And he had cleaned his act up because, you know, he had a straight
mopped up his genetic frame.
Total makeover.
Went to rehab.
Right, yeah.
Went to rehab.
Antler rehab, yeah.
Yeah.
And he looked good, and he had a lot of character, but I still, like, I just didn't feel like he was that good of a scoring deer. And I thought maybe he'd go mid-40s from those first photos. And I'm like, well, I got nothing else going on right now. And I didn't really get overly excited to him. All of his photos were in the middle of the night. And, you know, so I wasn't real sure. So most of my deer that I've killed, I know, don't tell Mark Drury this, but most of my deer that I've killed and the moon phase that I always look forward to is the October new moon. And I have like this 7-day window that if I'm on a deer and that I'm wanting to kill early season, they always make a daylight appearance sometime in that 7-day window in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And most of my deer I've killed in that window. And it breaks my heart to say that Mark Drury doesn't like that thing.
So but, how did you discover that phase? I mean, just from years of paying attention to the lunar calendar and just kind of figuring that out on your own, or did somebody kind of point you in that direction?
No, I stumbled on it, and it started in 2003, and I killed a buck and it was on the October new moon, and you know, I didn't say that I noticed that, but I made, you know, mental note on it. And then the next year I started hunting a buck, and I was on him, and he was straight nocturnal, and he started getting closer to closer daylight movement, like going into that new moon. And then the day or 2 days before the new moon, he made a daylight appearance on a food plot. The next day I went in and I killed him an hour before dark on that food plot. And I was like, huh, same moon phase as last year. The next year, same exact situation, had a buck show up in that, and I killed him the day after the new moon. And then it just kept happening year after year after year.
Interesting.
And I kind of contribute it to knowing the property, knowing where the bucks bed. That property was a special piece of property, and like it was reclaimed strip mine, and I knew where the bucks would bed, and I knew where they would feed. And I put all my food plots on the ridge tops because that was the best place that I could plant.
Those are cool properties to hunt. I grew up hunting a property like that in an old coal stripping area.
Oh, it's awesome. Great funnels and transition areas.
Short spoils and shit like that. Just
right. Yep. It's awesome. I love it. And these bucks would bed, and then it was really nice because I would hunt these food plots, and the deer would start coming out really early. They would feed for 10, 15 minutes and then drop off the ridges to go to the big ag fields. So these big fields, some of them fields were 5 acres that are planting food plots in. You know, that's not huge, but for around where I was at, that's pretty good sized food plot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they didn't hang out long. They would come out, they would feed, they would socialize, they would drop off into the bottoms to go to the main ag fields for the evening and after dark, which made it great because usually once dark hit, the deer were gone. So it made easy act,
exit
strategy for my plots. And then in the late season, it flipped. All the ag down low was gone. My plots were still great because they didn't spend a lot of time in there eating. Now those transition and those kill plots became main food, you know, main feed, food lot or plots, you know?
Awesome. Yeah. Talk about a killer setup, man. That's
really
awesome.
Good. And I had that farm just manicured, and every year, like, I just would kill them, the deer, you know, in that moon phase. And even my biggest buck, my 180, that buck was straight nocturnal. And the two days before I killed him, we had, this was an 18, and I don't know if you guys had it, but like right in the middle of October, we had like a 90 degree heat snap.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we had it for 2 days, and it was the day before the new moon and the new moon. And I didn't hunt. I kicked myself in the ass, and I, you know, I run wireless trail cameras, and I had photos of that buck for the first time in daylight in the moon phase. But I didn't hunt because I'm like, it's 93 degrees. He's not going to move today.
I don't blame you, really.
But he did it anyway. Yeah. He was there.
Yeah. And
crazy.
Then the weather snapped. So that moon phase just, you know, sticks with me. And then going into this year, that buck was straight nocturnal, and that 58 acre farm, he let me plant a food plot, and that buck was showing up on that food plot, and boom, the day of the new moon, I get a photo of him right at probably last shooting light for the first time ever, you know, and anywhere near shooting light. But the wind was wrong. I didn't hunt. I couldn't have hunted him anyway. We had straight south winds, and with the south wind, yeah, I couldn't hunt that plot.
Yep.
And so that made me feel a little better about him, and I continued watching him. And he would do, like, these cycles. He would do – I'd get photos of him 3 days in a row, and then he was gone for 3 days. And I'd get him 3 days, and he was gone 3 days. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so then Halloween comes, and that farm is really difficult to hunt mornings. And I don't hunt mornings early season anyway. Typically, my rule of thumb is I don't hunt before October 27th. I won't hunt mornings. So – but Halloween – I would have typically been hunting a morning, but I didn't because that property, the first whole section of that property, including my food plot, the moment you pull off the road, any and every deer in those fields is on to you because you're just totally exposed, you know. And the whole front of the property is basically a field. So I didn't hunt the morning. At just after daylight, Halloween morning, I get a photo of him about 100 yards off the field, leaving the field, going through a saddle. And I was like, son of a bitch, you know?
He did it again.
Yeah, did it
again. Got me again.
And I was like, okay, tomorrow morning I'm gonna go in there. Well, the next day was that Sunday. We had 60-mile-an-hour winds, and that saddle gets full brunt force across this huge big valley of all the wind. And I'm like, there is no way they're going to be on the backside of that ridge in this wind. 9:30 in the morning, there he goes through the saddle. So I'm like, damn it.
He likes the heat and he likes the wind.
Yeah. And so I went up and got him that tree stand that evening, and I sat for about 35 minutes, and trees were crashing down in the valley, and like the I'm in an oak that's probably, you know, 15 feet around, and it's not moving that bad, but everything around me is like laying down sideways with these gusts of wind, and I'm like, this is ridiculous.
This is not a good idea.
At that point, you're like, how fucking stupid am I?
Yeah, exactly. So I got down and went on the backside of the ridge, tried to get down out of the wind a little bit, and wasn't where I wanted to be, and saw a few deer, but nothing that it wasn't him. So that was on November 1st. November 2nd, now the whole three-day cycle's in my mind. I'm like, okay, this is the last day. If he's around before he takes another three-day hiatus, and I decided we still had like 16-mile-an-hour winds that day, and I figured, okay, the deer are going to be wanting to get out of that wind, and this property has this point off of the ridge that is pretty thick. It used to be pine trees. The pine trees all died, and it's just multiflora rows and just thick, nasty. And then just over this little saddle is kind of this cove that's kind of broke from the wind as well on the neighboring property, and there's a gas line that separates the two property. I'm like, well, I'm going to hunt this kind of transition area in between those two bedding areas. There's a bunch of scrapes in there, and, you know, I'm hopefully he'll be out of the wind and he's in one of those two bedding areas, and I'll try to catch him going from one to the other, you know, checking out some does or running that scrape line. And I got in and I was in stand about an hour, and 4:30 in the evening, I just kind of glanced up. So this is probably the most like hillbilly ass setup that I've ever had, but where I wanted to hunt, there's not a lot of trees. It's an old like locust grove, just nasty. There's not a lot of trees big enough to climb, but the previous landowner built this permanent stand with like metal tin like walls on it years and years ago. Yeah. With an extension ladder to get up in it, you know, that type of thing. And so I knew it was there, and I was like, that spot is actually where I kind of need to be. So I ended up taking a climber in, and that stand was so rickety. I attached my climber to one of the trees because I didn't trust standing on the platform of that stand. And I actually was inside that dumpy permanent stand that was built there in a climbing stand.
That's great.
And so I'm sitting there, and I just glance up, and you know, at 4:30 in the evening, the sun was just kind of straight over the ridge, and all I saw was antlers coming across the gas line, and I immediately just knew it was him. He was probably 70 yards from me, and he was kind of quartering to, and he was just walking across the gas line, and he goes behind this pine tree, and he stops, and I saw his legs, and then he just stopped, and he stood there for like probably 3 minutes. I don't know if he was just kind of surveying he kind of topped over the ridge. I think he was just kind of surveying the area before he committed. And, I wasn't even excited yet. I didn't know where he was going. I was like, oh, I'll start my Tacticam. I hit Tacticam, a dumb battery on my Tacticam was dead.
Of course.
Nice.
The one time I remember to hit the button, I My battery was dead. And finally, he started walking again, and he ducks his head down, and he goes under that pine tree, and just on the other side of that pine tree was a big scrape. And he walks up there, checks the scrape, and he's raking it, cleaning it out, and all I could see was, like, from basically his jawbone up, and, you know, and he's just, you know, working the licking branch and screwing around there, and I'm like, okay. From that scrape, he had four trails that he could take. Three of them brought him by me within 30 yards, and then the one that kind of skirted the ridge was a longer poke, and he kind of put his head down, and I couldn't see him, and then I see him, he's got his head to the ground, just smelling the ground, like smelling, taking a step, and I drew back on him at one point, thinking he was going to make a left around the multiflora rose and come on the 30-yard trail, and then he turned and started going back up the hill, and I let down on him, and he kind of just stood there sniffing, took a few more steps, and then I'm like, okay, he's going to commit to that tall, that furthest trail, and if he does that, I only got about another 10 yards before I can shoot him. So he takes another step, and kind of he's in the open, and I drew back on him, and ranged him. He is 52 yards, and I just started applying the pressure, and the shot broke, and it felt great. You know, when it kind of startles you, and you're like, oh, shit, it just shot, and you're, you know, that's that's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And but when it happens, you're like, oh, God, I didn't want it to go off. You know?
Oh, no,
I'm not ready.
I'm new.
And the hardest part was the setting sun was directly over his back, and I'm actually – from where I was at, he was above me on the ridge, and I'm shooting straight into the sun.
You're getting John
so
Wayne.
So picking a spot was pretty freaking difficult. But when the shot broke, lighted knock went flying. It was 52 yards, so you had plenty of time to watch the knock fly. And it made that wallop noise, and he let out this, you know, and you hear that, you know, you just let the wind out of him, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just, like, face-planted into the hillside, and he's bulldozing, trying to get up on his feet. He gets up on his feet and went barreling back across the gas line right away, and I could just see blood spraying. And he just gets to the other side of the gas line right away. I see treetops shake, and it went dead silent. And I'm like, did he just fall right there?
He long-arded.
And sure as shit, that's as far as he went. He went 25 yards.
That's what you call laying it on him, man. Yeah. When you hit him that hard, and
when they talk to you at the shot, it's like
when they talk to you, he spoke back to you, and then he can't put his
like he dry heat for a second.
Yeah, well, he spoke to you, and then 100%. He just can't get his shit together from there on out until he died. You know, that's putting it on him, man. Was it a heart shot or what?
It it went in between. He was quartering away. And it went in between the last and second to last rib and buried in the offside shoulder. So it's double lung, and I cut all the arteries off the top of the heart.
Just cleaned him out.
Yeah. Yeah. So he had nothing.
As Ross would say, he's fucked.
You are so fucked.
You're so fucked.
he was running on empty, that's for sure.
That's awesome, man.
And he was a stud, so too.
He surprised me. Like, that was one of the few deer I've killed in a lot of years, honestly, the only deer I've ever killed in my life that I walked up on, and I'm like, oh shit, you know, I knew he had all the character and the kickers and the trash and shit, but I didn't really realize he had the mass. His body was gigantic, his neck was enormous, and he actually had the ground growth on me. And he ended up being about 12 inches bigger than I expected him to go, like 148, and he ended up going 159 and 7/8. So
that's awesome, man.
And he had the mass on the bases. He had the mass all the way out through the main beam and everything. He was just a beautiful deer.
Where he really gained it was his brows started almost at the pedicle. So that gave him almost 6-inch bases, and then he carried that out. And that also, because his brows started that low, that gave him an extra inch on his brows that I wasn't anticipating. You know, and then the same thing with his twos, you know, his mass carried, and pretty much every measurement was just slightly bigger than what I was expecting. You know, he had
adds up too.
three mass measurements over 5 inches. He ended up with like 38 and a half inches of mass, that's which is pretty solid.
That's a massive deer.
Hell yeah.
What'd you get, Damien? What'd you get on that that left flyer? What'd that measure?
That was 2.5.
2.5. That's a pretty good little sticker
office
there.
Office 2. Yep. Yeah.
That's kick ass, yep, man. That's awesome. What a killer badass season, man. Two badass shots on two deer. Yeah. Like, not chip shots by any means.
This is a season you'll never forget for sure.
Yeah. Honestly, the last two seasons, I mean, last year was the same thing. You know, last year I killed, a 7.5-inch, 145-inch 8-point buck. I shot, a 280-inch elk in New Mexico. I killed a bear in West Virginia. You know, so this year I killed a mule deer in Nebraska, a bear in West Virginia, a whitetail in Ohio, took my buddy and did a DIY in New Mexico, and he shot a 316-inch bull elk. Ooh, so, damn. I mean, the last two seasons, you know, have been absolutely – I don't know what I've done to deserve it or whose ass I've kissed or whatever. But
just good, clean living,
kissing,
man.
That ass.
Just man. Good, clean living.
It's making that kick-ass barbecue and making everybody happy. That's
is that what it is? It's like a barbecue. Yeah, so it's been pretty amazing.
Good for you, man. That's so awesome.
Yeah, congratulations.
Congrats, man.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Yeah, when I landed that farm in Carrollton, I actually messaged Clint, and I was like, hey, that's his area. You know, he grew up there, and I'm like there's a lot of big deer come from that area, obviously, but there's pockets, you know, hot pockets in every place you go. And I messaged him and told him, I said, hey,
I love hot pockets.
What do you know about this area? How you feel about this area? He's like, fantastic. I do a lot of hunting out there. And I was like, perfect.
That's all you need to know from Clint.
Yeah, right. Right. So the more into November we got, the more impressed I was with that property and, especially the age structure. I haven't seen any absolute giants, but several really nice bucks have shown up on camera, and hopefully I can hang on to this place for more than just 1 year.
Are those some of the pictures you've been sending me?
Yeah.
He's got a couple really, really impressive deer that next year are going to be slobs.
That's awesome, dude. Something to look forward to. It always makes it feel good. But, Damien, I think all of us can relate to that, what you're saying, to a point, like, putting your heart and soul in a property, then losing it and have to pick something else up. Like, that's been the story of my entire life of hunting, you know? So I'm trying to get a lease here. So something I can like put 20 years of investment into, but it'll also keep these other small pieces that I can, keep tabs on, but that's hard to do. This is quickly turning into a rich man's sport. If you want to hunt where there's big deer, because you know, there's only so much public. There's so many people on it nowadays, especially with this like new surge of internet public land hunters, which is great, but also makes it difficult. So it's just hard to keep a good piece where you can put time and money into, unless you can afford to buy your own piece.
Well, and like Damien said too, like, it's not, you don't have these big tracts anymore that these families own. They sold everything off, so it's these tiny little tracts that all these people own anymore.
Yeah, you just got to have good neighbors that work together on the same type of plan. Right. You know, and,
that's the best way to do it. And the difference, the other bad part about it is once you start killing deer, and people, not saying you're famous by any means, but people start taking notice to who's killing deer on a routine, and then they automatically assume it's because it's the property that you're hunting, and then they start weaseling in on where you're hunting and trying to get in around where you're hunting or whatever the case may be, when it has some to do with the land. But if you look at everybody that, you know, kills big deer year in and year out, it's one common denominator is they work harder than everybody else. When your life revolves around killing deer and finding big deer, like, if, you know, everybody, woe is me, it must be nice to have a nice, you know, ground like that, private ground. Well, you know what? Get off your lazy ass and go find some ground. Yep. I've lost two farms. I find ground. If that ground doesn't produce what I'm looking for, I go find more ground. I don't sit and just sulk and cry over my spilled milk and, oh, woe is me, you know? I might make enemies saying this, but it's plain and simple. If you don't have ground, go find it. Yep. If you don't have big bucks where you're hunting, go find more ground, period. Well, there's a difference between the people like you and myself, Austin, Ross, you know, whoever, that kills big deer routinely. they bust their ass and their life revolves around finding big deer.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You don't just you don't just trip into a 150.
That's right.
You
know? Bingo. So
whammy. Well, the thing, you know, too, I had somebody, and not that I'm, I consider myself a pretty good big buck killer, but I like to surround myself with monster killers, you know, like yourself and basically everybody else at the podcast table. You know, I had somebody say to me the same thing. I had to say the same thing you just said to a couple dudes that are other good dudes, but I just don't. I think they're fairly green to when it comes to big buck killing. It was like, man, you just must have good ground. I'm like, hold on, motherfucker. Like, I get that. Maybe I do, but it takes.
How did you get that?
Yeah,
you
well, that's ingredient that number one. You have to hunt where the big deer are, but you have to be smart enough and motivated enough to get where the big deer
that's
are.
That's why I went back. Idiots don't kill big deer. They might get lucky. Consistently is the key. And the thing
and
is, it's
weekends,
like
those weekends when they're going out ATV riding and you're planning food plots, or they're going out to the bar getting shit faced and you're prepping for season. Yep. That's the things that set people apart. And, you know, are the things that, you know, if you don't go ATV riding and you go door knocking trying to find more land while everyone else is out land, you know, ATV riding, you're going to find land. But people don't do that. They want to take the easy route and just, you know,
100%
make excuses.
Well, that too, and it's like I broke it down for these guys. I had that conversation with them because they hunt. They don't realize it. It's this guy and his buddy. They hunt some of the best ground in the county that we live in. And I'm like, dude, I know about the ground you hunt. Like, if I had a whole season there,
Give me one season.
I'd kill the biggest buck of my life there because I would put more time in than you.
Absolutely.
And I'm like, you know, you want to say it's my ground? I bounce every 2 years. I'm looking for something new. I got Pope and Young's in six or seven different counties in Illinois, and that's not by accident. I didn't get lucky on a drunken weekend when I went out for 2 hours in the afternoon because I slept in and tripped into one.
You always run into people at the gas station. Damien, you'll understand this too, but you go to the gas station and all of a sudden people are like, wow, I heard you killed a big buck. There must be a lot of big bucks out there. And I say, nope, it was just the one. Been hunting for a lot of years. And then another a guy says, well, he asked another buddy of mine, he's like, hey, that's a nice deer that your buddy killed there. He goes, where'd he shoot him at? He goes, well, I'm not for sure, but I'd guess right behind the shoulder.
You know what I love? It's like, well, I'm going to go hunt where he hunt because he shot this buck there. I'm like, yo, dude, that deer's dead.
Yeah, you're hunting a ghost.
You can't you can't kill a ghost and mount it.
The property I killed that buck on this.
Go ahead, Damien.
Where I killed my buck this year, that landowner has owned that property for 20-plus years, and I killed the largest buck on that property. I've hunted it for a month, and I killed the largest buck that has ever been killed off that property in 20-something years, and the largest buck they've ever seen out there. And, it, you know, that's not saying that I'm a better hunter. It's just I worked harder for it.
Put the work in, man.
Exactly.
For sure.
Yeah, you didn't just get talented by chance to kill it. You know what I mean? Like, you're knowledgeable and all that. And I had something similar. And the buck I shot on this property is like a 30-acre tract of timber I got permission on. You got to get all your buck killing in before shotgun season because it's worse than public. It's a 30-acre piece, and there are seven trucks parked out there the first day of firearm season. No bullshit. And my dad and I killed bucks on there, and the buck I killed was a 138-inch eight-pointer. And I called the guy who owns the ground real close to my family, and he comes out and goes, dude, you're the first person to kill a buck like that out here in 30 years with a bow. And the next year, there were so many people on it, I gave up on it. I couldn't even hunt it. There's so many people on there. And it was a high 30s eight-pointer, you know? Like, not a giant, great deer. I lost all my ground, and that was the place I had to hunt. So I put my time in and killed that deer, whatever.
That's a little bit what I'm worried about on this property because the guy's son kind of hunts a little bit. And, you know, I'm like, okay, now he knows I killed that buck out there. Next year he's going to – he gun hunts, right? He's never bow hunted. And I'm like, next year he's going to go to Walmart and buy a crossbow. And, you know, he's going to wait till I plan a food plot and put all this work in, and then he's going to start showing up to hunt. You know?
I have some advice. Maybe just divert him. You know, get him a good buck and get him one early, and then you don't have to worry about him.
Yeah,
get him taken care of.
Pull your October moon phase on him.
Yeah, right.
But seriously though, that's anytime you shoot a big buck and you got neighbors, that's the first thing you get scared about. I mean, I think I ended my last podcast with, holy smokes, I I'd rather just lay low and not get any attention on this, because this is,
yeah,
this just puts more pressure on you. You can't go out and enjoy hunting these big bucks.
Right? Well, here's what we're going to do. We're just going to have Damien on and Clint on like we do all the time, and we'll get you on a lot more, Damien, and then all the attention will be at Ohio.
Yeah.
Everybody will be selling, they'll be selling their Illinois pieces for cheap.
All the deer are running east.
Last weekend when we were hunting Kurt's farm.
Exactly, yeah. Some shit like that will be going down. So yeah, Ohio, baby. It's the new number one. Fuck Iowa. Man. Fuck Illinois.
Yeah, nothing in Iowa. Keep moving.
Yep. It's like checkers. Everybody skips over Indiana. There we are. Right when Clint Casper territory. It's fucked up.
Flyover state.
Where'd you shoot this deer at? Ohio.
Ohio. Ross's 202. Ohio.
Ohio.
It looked like an Iowa tag to me. Nope.
So
when I was in the Army, we kind of did that. We hunted Fort Bragg, and people down there, even 20 years ago, they would steal your spot in a heartbeat. And there's like three of us, me and two other buddies, that would consistently kill deer. And then people would go over to the sign out sheet and they would see where we were signed out. And then the next thing you know, you'd go in to hunt your spot and the sign out sheet was full. Like everybody was flocking to that. So it was totally illegal what we were doing back then, but we would sign out for different areas and say we were in different areas. And when we would kill deer, we were like, yeah, we were over in, Zabotosky area and Z1, you know, and then people, those areas that go flocking and we go hunt over the other areas.
It ain't
and we got in trouble for it. Then, you know, you couldn't even lie about it because you had to sign out for the area that you were going to. So we'd park our trucks and people would drive the roads looking for where your trucks are parked in those areas. So then they'd be like, okay, where's he signed out? Oh, he signed out for Z1. And then they'd just go ride the fire breaks looking for where your truck's parked. And then the next thing you know, you got 10 trucks parked where your truck was parked. We ended up lying about where we were hunting. And, you know, it's just,
gotta do what you gotta do.
It is what it is.
I don't know what the limit of statute of limitations is on that. So maybe the, Uncle Sam will be coming back on me for telling that story, but
hey.
I think we talked about this a couple days ago. I said,
I was just getting ready to bring that up,
yeah,
Austin.
I said, once you get to a certain level, you have to play people almost more than you do the deer. Like when you're hunting, you're concerned more with what the people are doing than what the deer are doing.
We talked about my turning point of like going from, like, I'm a consistent butt killer now. So now I'm like, we're talking about me getting over the hump a little bit of like giants, I guess. I don't know what the term, there isn't a term. But that's what you talked about, you know, you got to learn how to hunt around people, even on private.
When you have to share farms with people, you almost have to give them information or keep information away from them. It's kind of a shitty thing to do, but when you're in there hunting, you almost have to play the people as much as you do the deer.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to do climbing stands or hanging bangs or whatever you want to call them, because if you put stands up and they find your stands, next thing you know, they're 20 yards away from your stand. Well, you weren't here. I was going to hunt my stand, you know, that sort of thing. So
I'm fortunate that I do hunt with some good people right now. I don't hunt with a lot of guys, but a couple of guys that are real good dudes, and I want to see them get deer, you know. But
well, and that's the only bad thing about, like, having the sticker in my back window, because I'm local to my area. I grew up there.
I'm taking mine off.
And, like...
I am, dude.
You know, someone drives by every time they see my vehicle, and they know, okay, Eric's hunting right there.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Yep.
Yep.
Sure. I learned that, you know, again, my age, I learned that probably 15 years ago. You know, you used to have the logos and stickers in your windows and people would learn what your truck is. And I'm like, nope, I'm just going to fly incognito people don't need to know where I'm at.
I'm just going to buy a new beater every year.
That's what I'm saying, dude. I'm going to buy an old Subaru Outback and put a Coexist sticker and a sparkly peace sign bumper sticker on the son of a bitch. And
like a furry steering wheel cover. Yeah.
Tint the windows out so you can't see what's
there's
in there.
There's some really nice bird watching member club stickers.
Yeah. There you go.
I think you need a bird watcher sticker on your...
I'm going to get a big bumper sticker that says Cowboys Butts Drive Me Nuts.
There you go.
And then
a big rainbow over the top.
You would.
Nobody would know.
know that apple core, you want that.
Yeah.
Save a deer, ride a cowboy.
That's not
that's a new shirt idea.
I think we just got our new shirt.
They're like, yeah, that's funny, but we're not buying it.
I'm not wearing that.
We'll spend all the money to get it made. I bet you a bunch of the BHA members would buy it.
Oh, there are people that would buy it for sure. Jeez.
Kidding. Easy, guys.
Easy.
Hey, just joking. Hey, I thought we were having a good time here.
Hey.
In that rev limiter, dropping the F-bombs. And faggot's the one I'm talking about.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, well, there it is.
Easy.
Hey, there it is.
We're having a good time.
Just kidding around.
God damn it.
That's one of those words you can't say anymore. 10 years ago, you could, but it's funny. You know, what? Maybe not.
I think it's funny.
Sorry. Damien, thank you so much, man. It's been a good time. Congratulations on your season.
Yeah, congrats man. That's awesome.
Hell of a season,
appreciate it, dude.
Hey, thanks for carrying our team through. We needed that 160.
Hey, man, we're in third place out of 500 teams. That's pretty impressive.
Not bad for me limping in with a longbow.
Let's talk about this a little bit real quick before we close out, because in the team working class group, we talked about, well, I didn't even like see him initially. I didn't see this post initially about doing teams. I don't think I did anyway. But then Cole Young was talking about it, and it got brought up once Cole killed his giant, and then Ross killed his giant. I'm like, what is this? That's why I asked what everyone team's name
was.
Yeah,
so there's a bow hunting league competition going on, and Clay invited me to do it. I honestly didn't even consider it because I was going to hunt with the longbow this year. But so Damien, Clay, and myself are on a team, and basically there's unlimited upgrades. You take your biggest deer. Each of the three guys take their biggest deer, and the total number of inches that's greatest is in the lead.
Oh, you got to take your biggest deer. It's not amount of deer.
Yeah, like so my first deer was 138, and then I killed a 146, so my 146 gets used.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Okay.
And so Cole and Landon and Dana are all on a team. So when Dana goes out there and smashes a 160 plus, I mean it's all over with. They're gonna leave.
Yeah. But mule deer is -20. So if you
because
kill
they're
mule,
a little larger,
ain't that some shit?
Ain't
I
that
shoot
some
160
shit?
Inch mule deer, it's only a 140.
Yeah.
Right. I think the longbow kill should add 20 personally.
I think there should be a stipulation there if they're gonna take points off for a mule deer.
Traditional equipment should add points.
Absolutely.
Well, then maybe we'll figure something out with the team.
That's what we should do. Do like a team competition and break it into like three-man teams for next year. That'd be fun.
That'd be cool. I see so many like between Instagram messages and Facebook notifications. Like there's just certain shit I don't see.
I missed it also.
Yep. You know, so
I didn't see it until Ross commented on it somehow.
But anyway.
So you commented on it not that long ago.
So there's two working class teams up in the mix right now out of 500 some teams.
I think Cole's team, we all know Dana's probably going to end up smashing a giant. Yeah. So when he does,
the pressure's on him. Solid, it's going to be, they're going to lock it up.
He's got lots of
the couple teams, the teams that are ahead of us are, I think one guy killed like a 200 and then the other two guys killed like 120s, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, no shit.
So,
yep.
That helps. Yeah. They're really lopsided. I would say our team has killed the three nicest deer.
Yep.
You know, with a 160, and what was yours, Austin? 140.
My big was 146, and Clay's was a 144. So three solid deer. Yep.
Very cool. Well, damn, that's something cool to do. Yeah, I completely like slept on that post that got sent out. I don't know what the hell, but it's pretty cool. It's cool. You guys are
it's badass,
killing it. But
we're repping, man.
But Damien, anything you want to shout out, man, before we close it out?
No, we're good, man. I yacked my mouth off pretty good there for the last hour or so.
You did good, man.
Well, that was good.
Before we close it out,
and rambling on, sometimes I feel like I talk too much. So.
It's easy to talk deer hunting, brother. You killed it, though.
That's true.
Go ahead, Eric.
Also, before we close it out, you had two badass seasons the last two seasons. What do you got in store for us next season?
Ooh.
I'm really hoping to go back to New Mexico. I didn't draw this year. Honest to God, like if I could elk hunt the month of September every year in New Mexico, I would never kill another whitetail and be perfectly okay with it.
Damn.
That's a bold statement.
There is nothing greater in my eyes. I've never experienced the only animal I've ever killed, my first of that had brought me to tears, which was a raghorn shitty little 4x4, was an elk. And the emotions that run through you when you kill an elk and the work that you put in to kill one, there's just nothing greater than in my eyes. And maybe it's because I'm biased and I've killed a bunch of whitetails. Maybe if I didn't have but one whitetail on the wall, I would say that. But their elk are just absolutely amazing. And New Mexico is freaking amazing. When you can go out, you know, I hear horror stories of guys going elk hunting and they heard an elk but never saw an elk.
Me.
And when I go to New Mexico, I see 300-inch elk every single day. You know, you don't get a chance to kill everyone every day, but you're in the mix, you're in the shuffle, and there is nothing greater than that.
So good, man. I'm glad to hear you say that. That's cool.
That's cool. Well, cool, man. Well, hopefully you draw a tag New Mexico. That's one that's on my radar as well. Clint Casper's killed a big bull in New Mexico. And something I always thought about.
Sounds like I need to go to New Mexico.
These guys are killing bulls. We got to do that.
What are we doing, guys? God, we got
to
go.
We have to do that.
I'm giving up on
white tails. I'm telling you. And it's a straight lottery. So, like, there's no preference points. It's like straight shit pot luck.
That's nice.
And if you draw, it's fantastic. But you could put in, you know, like, even as a Reddit resident, you know, that some of them guys put in for 6-7 years, never draw. And then they'll draw 3 years in a row, huh. Or, you know, weird. Because it's just a shit pot luck. And, you know, we put in, when was it, 19, and we both drew, my buddy and I both drew.
Can you put it in as a party?
And then, we did, because when I did it, like, I put in, and so I decided I was going to, if you use an outfitter, you increase your percentage odds by like double, because they take 10% of the tags and put them in an outfitter pool. And as a non-resident, if you just put in as a non-resident, you have like a 2% chance of drawing, depending on the unit that you pick and everything. So if you use an outfitter, you get a bigger odds of drawing. It's still small, but you more than double your odds of drawing. And I put in with the guy, and then my buddy said, dude, that's my dream hunt. I want to do that. And I'm like, well, we can put in as a party hunt. And I thought at that time, I didn't understand it. I thought if one of the group got drawn, you both automatically got drawn. Well, that's kind of the case, unless there's one tag left in the unit you're applying for and they pull your application out and you're a party tag, they pitch your shit. You can screw yourself if you do the party tag thing. We didn't do party tag last year and he got a tag, you know, and I didn't. And I'm like, well, I'm going back. So we just did DIY and got in, you know, we kind of learned the unit the year before and we got in the mix and he shot a whopper.
That's awesome.
So yeah, it's awesome. Like there's nothing like it. I could talk and talk and talk about elk hunting and like I'm some expert at it. And, you know, I've honestly gone 3 times in my life, but I've killed 3
well,
elk.
Well, I tell you what, man,
doing something right
on Instagram. You're an expert.
I'll tell you what, man, honestly, if you,
no shit. Yeah.
If I was a bow hunter in Illinois or Iowa and I really wanted to up my game, I think I'd start going to Ohio.
Ohio hunt,
and then I'd go to New Mexico and shoot a elk.
I heard Ohio's got good elk.
Is that right?
That's what I heard. My buddy David.
There's a high fence preserve down in Guernsey County that you could kill some whopper.
I mean, the next level is
Hocking Hill State
Ohio.
Park. There's a bunch of elk there. Go hunt that.
It's Ohio, New Mexico. Reserve. I mean, you can't.
And in Illinois.
Just go cut the fence.
Ohio, you mean, David?
Ohio and New Mexico.
Yep.
Definitely.
But to get to Ohio, you got to stop in Illinois.
Get Casey's pizza. Then
well, just to grab
moving.
The pizza.
Yeah. Get gas and keep
your ass down the road.
Beat, motherfucker.
Ohio!
They're so friendly there.
All right, man. We appreciate you, dude. This podcast has been killer. You're a killer, dude. You got to be one of the top whitetail killers in the country. There's no doubt about that.
Absolutely.
I doubt that.
Well, I mean.
You're on fire, David.
Percentages, brother. Percentages. All right, man.
Percentages.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. You know what to do. Go shoot your bow. We love you.
When you go out there and the fish are where you think they are, any one of these casts could be the bite. It's the most exciting fishing that I know right here at Hawk's Cave.
Oh, that's awesome. Experience the best saltwater fishing the world has to offer. Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience. Brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts. Every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. The destination for outdoor entertainment.